Hail, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Greater Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us tonight certainly one of my favorite guests, Dr. Russell Blaylock, who is a retired neurosurgeon. He spends full time researching what's going on in the medical profession. Writes a newsletter, a medical newsletter, and we'll tell you a little later how to get it. I've subscribed to it. Fascinating material, and we're going to be covering a couple of subjects tonight that are dealt with in his newsletter. And the first one will be the issue of diabetes. Now, really, it's rather shocking when you realize that there are well over 40 million Americans that either have diabetes or are in the preliminary stages of diabetes, and most of them don't even realize what's going on. And diabetes is dramatically on the increase, specifically both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. But you don't want to hear me talk about it. Let's talk to Dr. Blaylock, because he's done a great report on this. Thanks so very much for being with us tonight, Russell.
Well, thank you, Stan. It's an honor to be on your program.
Well, let's go ahead and you start telling our listeners the background of diabetes and what the problem is and really what can be done. I'll have to admit, I learned an awful lot of reading that. Diabetes has changed a lot since I went to medical school and the knowledge about it.
It really has. In the beginning, we thought diabetes was just a problem of deficiency in insulin secretion, and that the answer to that problem was to provide people with insulin. Of course, in the beginning it was porcine insulin, and then they perfected a way to make human insulin through DNA manipulation, and thought the problem was solved. But they realized, as they worked out the biochemistry and the physiology of diabetes, it was infinitely more complex than that. And we found that actually the problem is not too little insulin, but the most common form of diabetes, the problem is too much insulin. And that the cells themselves become resistant to insulin. The function of insulin is to allow glucose, the energy molecule, to enter the cell so that it can be used for energy. Glucose cannot just pass into the cell, it has to be transported in. And the way it does that, there's an insulin receptor on the surface of the cell. When insulin interacts in that receptor, then it'll allow glucose to enter.
It's sort of like opening the door then until it gets in.
Right. It's just a little key opens that door and lets the insulin travel in. If that key doesn't fit, if the insulin doesn't fit the receptor, the door stays closed and the cell starts starving. It's not getting its energy. So it sends a message back to the pancreas and said, we're starving, we need more insulin. And so then the pancreas starts pumping out more and more insulin in an attempt to make the door work, and of course it's still resistant and it's not going to do it. So we call that type 2 or insulin resistant diabetes, and the problem is in the beginning there's way too much insulin. Well, insulin's a toxic substance in high concentrations. It does a lot of bad things metabolically to cells and tissues. We begin to learn that, and there's an intimate relationship between fat cells and insulin.
All right, I'm going to ask you to hold that for just a moment. We're going to have to take a break there, but we want to get into type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and then what happens when, of course, your sugar metabolism is out of whack, and you know, it could create all sorts of terrible complications and lead to amputations and blindness and kidney and heart disease, but we'll cover that in just a moment. Okay, go right ahead and get started there, Russell.
Well, you know, when we look at the enormity of the problem, we have 18.2 million people in this country who have diabetes, and we have another 5.2 million that have it and are not aware of it. But on top of that, we have 41 million people who have a stage that's going to eventually lead to this called the metabolic syndrome. It used to be called Syndrome X, but doctors are constantly changing names of diseases. So now it's called the metabolic syndrome. Well, what this syndrome entails is a combination of hypertension, high blood pressure, abnormal lipids in the blood like high LDL cholesterol, low HDL cholesterol, high triglycerides, and a high total cholesterol level. And the third thing is eventually developing the type 2 diabetes. So this triad of metabolic dysfunction is causing the body to produce a lot of free radicals, and that's damaging all of these cells. And it's doing this over decades. This is a very slow process. When they looked at what was called a nurse's health study, which was some like 118,000 nurses, they found out that if they follow them along for over 20 years, they found out that actually this process began 20 years before the diagnosis was eventually made. That is, before they developed full-blown diabetes. And that their risk of heart disease in the various early stages, that is back 20 years when they were first developing this metabolic syndrome, increased about 250%. So a lot of these women were developing advanced arteriosclerosis, heart disease, and stroke even before the diabetes became clinically diagnosable. The same thing occurs in men. By the time it becomes a full-blown metabolic syndrome, the risk of heart attack and stroke is 500%. So it's a very serious disease, and what we find out is because of the number of tissues that are affected by this diabetic and metabolic syndrome, it increases the risk of blindness. Most blindness in this country is due to diabetes. That's the number one cause, something like, I think, 14,000 people to as many as 24,000 people end up blind. It is the leading cause of amputations in this country, non-traumatic amputation. About 82,000 people a year lose a limb due to diabetes, usually a leg. It's a leading cause of loss of kidney function, people ending up on dialysis or needing kidney transplants. So we see that diabetes is a leading cause of most of these.
Hold that thought for just a moment here as our stations come on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking about diabetes and the terrible complications that come from it. And following, 180,000 nurses or something like that over a long period of time, they found that many of the diseases associated with diabetes were starting 20 years before it became apparent that they had diabetes. And this then leads to hardening of the arteries and the blindness and the loss of the limbs and the kidney changes and the heart changes. And all of these complications directly resulted to diabetes, but so much of this actually starts long before the clinical diabetes shows up. So this is a systemic disease, and it's rapidly increasing in our society today. It's so shocking as to both type 1 diabetes, which is the insulin-dependent diabetes we ordinarily see in children, and then the type 2 diabetes, which is the insulin-resistant diabetes we see ordinarily in older people, although all of this sometimes even gets more complicated, that nothing's fitting into their regular categories. But this is a major health problem here in the United States, with well over 46 million people either in the preliminary stages or with frank diabetes. And so much of this can be prevented, but I'm going to let Russell go ahead and pick up the story there.
One of the strong connections to diabetes is this epidemic of obesity. We know there's a very strong correlation between this metabolic syndrome and obesity and diabetes and obesity. So that puts us into the high lipids, the hypertension, the diabetes are all connected, arteriosclerosis, heart attack, strokes are connected to this obesity. Now, this doesn't mean that everybody that's obese is going to develop these conditions. In fact, some people that are quite thin will develop these conditions. And that's because they're producing high amounts of insulin. They have insulin resistance even though they're thin. But the vast majority, about 80% of people who have the metabolic syndrome, are in fact obese. When we look at our children, this is particularly frightening. It used to be that type 2 diabetes had very low incidence in our children. Now that's increased about 15-fold, so that large numbers of the diabetes cases, about 45% of cases of type 2 diabetes, are occurring in children. And this is sometimes children as young as 12 or 13 years of age.
But, Russell, this is all new. We never had this before, did we?
Oh, exactly. I mean, this is a new phenomenon. And it's paralleling this dramatic obesity. Well, the interesting thing that we find is that the type of fat makes a lot of difference. If it's internal fat, that is fat inside of your abdomen, what we call visceral fat, that fat is different than all the other fat in your body. It produces what's called adipokines, which are inflammatory chemicals. And when they looked at the diabetic young children, they found out they had high levels of these cytokine inflammatory chemicals that were coming from this internal fat. Interestingly, they looked at people who had fat surgery, that is, grossly obese men who had the fat removed surgically, and they found out that over 80% of them returned completely to normal. Their metabolic syndrome disappeared, their hypertension returned to normal, and all of these symptoms just disappeared. Then they looked at other people who were operated on, and only the internal fat was removed, no other fat. And those people, they found a dramatic reduction in the same types of disorders. For instance, they found that hypertension was reduced 62%, diabetes 77%, abnormal lipids were reduced in 70% of the people, and one of the diseases associated with this is sleep apnea. That is, the people that stop breathing in the middle of the night, those people had an 86% improvement, or 86% of the people, that symptom disappeared. So the vast majority of sleep apnea is cured simply by getting rid of this internal fat. Now, they found that if you lose 5 to 10% of weight, your fat weight overall, that reduced internal fat by 30%, and so these symptoms were improved. So merely changing your diet so that you lose that internal fat cured all of these symptoms. So your diabetes was cured, your bad lipids were cured, your hypertension was cured, your sleep apnea was cured. All these things were corrected simply by dietary changes. This is what's not being told to people. So the most important thing is when you see people with these big beer guts, they used to call them or still call them, those are the people that are at high risk of developing these diseases. Now, when we look at the different things that go on inside of the body, we know that as diabetes, as this metabolic syndrome begins to develop, even before the diabetes, that free radical generation in the body starts to build up. And that's what's damaging all of these cells and organs and tissues and causing the kidney failure and the vessels to be damaged that lead to heart attack and strokes and loss of limbs. And the blindness, it's the free radical generation. And that's going on for decades before people ever develop the diabetes and have the disease diagnosed.
Well, now, Russell, is it the fat cells are creating these free radicals? What's producing the free radicals?
Well, actually, it's the metabolic derangement. The fat cells produce the insulin resistance and produce the high insulin secretion. That leads to the hypertension, abnormal lipids, and then because of the metabolism is so abnormal in the body, that is, the cells can't get their energy, they start pouring out free radicals.
Okay.
So all the cells in the body are pouring out free radicals. So if you look at diabetic people, they have a high incidence of cancer, they have a high incidence of degenerative brain disorders, like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and these degenerative disorders of the brain, as well as the things that are commonly known to be associated with diabetes. Nerve damage is very common, and all of them are related to free radical damage. When we look at people who have diabetes, we find most of them have elevated C-reactive protein. That's a measure of lab tests that you can do to measure inflammation in your body. So we know that what's going on in the diabetic patient is they have chronic inflammation for decades before they develop all of these diseases. And we know that that is the number one cause of free radicals is chronic inflammation. And it's also the cause of heart attacks, strokes, cancer, degenerative brain disorders. So we're seeing that there's this intimate connection between abnormal insulin function, abnormal blood glucose, and all of these diseases. They're all interconnected. And that's why diabetics tend to get all of these things, and that's why the metabolic syndrome is so incredibly dangerous. The interesting thing about it is the ease at which all this can be corrected. It's simply corrected by doing a few things. Number one, eating lots of fruits and vegetables, mainly vegetables, because the fruits have sugar in it. You don't want to eat any carbohydrates that do not have fiber in them. In other words, you want a carbohydrate like a bean that have fiber connected with it, rather than things that are just pure carbohydrate with very little fiber, such as potatoes and sugars and pastries and cakes and pies. All of those things have absolutely no fiber in it. They're just pure carbohydrates, and they produce these just metabolic derangements. You want to avoid MSG because we've learned one thing, is that the cells in the pancreas that secretes insulin is operated by a glutamate receptor. That means glutamate, the amino acid, is what turns on that cell to secrete its insulin. And that if you consume a lot of foods that have a lot of MSG in it, it makes the insulin cell work so hard eventually to exhaust that cell, and that's what eventually produces the full-blown diabetes.
Now, of course, this one thing is that there's MSG in just about every prepared food that you get today, and even in many of the things you'll get in restaurants. And this is something we never used to have, isn't that true?
Exactly. And the problem is that there's so much of the glutamate that's disguised. It's not just pure monosodium glutamate, but it's hydrolyzed protein, caseinate, soy protein isolate, soy protein concentrate, natural flavoring. There's just literally dozens of names of this high glutamate additives is put in foods.
Is there any relationship to NutraSweet and aspartame? Is that fit into the same category?
Right. The aspartame contains aspartic acid, which is also an excitatory amino acid like glutamate, and it will activate the pancreatic cell as well. We also know that if you have a child who genetically is at risk of developing type 1 diabetes, they only develop the diabetes if there's an environmental factor added to that. And so when you look at the list of environmental factors, it's exposure to certain viruses, like the Coxsackie B4 virus, and the certain vaccines, like the MMR vaccine, exposure to monosodium glutamate, and exposure to cow's milk before age 3 months. All of those things will trigger type 1 diabetes in a genetically susceptible child. Yet the public is told absolutely nothing about avoiding milk in their children. They're told nothing about avoiding MSG and other food additive excitative toxins whatsoever. They're not informed of this.
How about nitrosamines?
Nitrosamines also are a trigger.
And that's something you find in hot dogs and prepared meats, things like that.
Right. All of these processed meats that you find in packages, the thin sliced bologna and hams, and all these have bacon. They all have nitrates or nitrites in them. When nitrites are consumed in your stomach, they're converted to nitrosamines, which is known to be a cancer-causing chemical. But it also precipitates diabetes.
And I think it's so important that one of the points you make in your newsletter is that children who are breastfed until they're about 6 months of age, their incidence of type 1 diabetes is considerably diminished, isn't it?
Exactly. Dramatic reductions just by breastfeeding to 6 months.
And yet, on the other hand, if you're taking cow's milk before 3 months of age, why your incidence of type 1 diabetes goes up, why aren't they telling people that?
Well, they're not only not telling, but it was strongly proven in the medical literature. They did very elaborate testing to show that this occurs.
And we'll be back here in just a moment here with Dr. Russell Blaylock. And you want to get his whole report because you can get this tape, but you want to get the report and read it as well. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Russell Blaylock, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking about diabetes, type 1, type 2. So you pick up the story there.
The type 1 diabetes really has not changed in incidence at all. What's changed is the type 2 diabetes, and that's the one that's connected to the metabolic syndrome and most intimately connected to this dramatic change in our diet, exposure to MSG, that we're seeing in our society. The interesting thing about monosodium glutamate and the other excitotoxin food additives is that when you feed these to animals upon birth, they develop gross obesity, just like we see in our children. This has been repeated hundreds of times, and it is now used as a standard way to produce gross obesity in animals. You just give them a dose of MSG right after birth, and they'll become grossly obese. They'll also develop diabetes of the type 2 form.
And I think it's really so interesting that, we hear all this talk here in the United States about, oh, isn't it terrible, everybody's so obese, they're overweight, and yet, they never mention the relationship. Scientific studies over and over again have shown that if you give animals either MSG or aspartame NutraSweet, when they're very young, they grow up and they be pathologically obese. Why don't they ever tell the American people that? Why do they emphasize all these other things and withhold the scientific studies or knowledge of the scientific studies? I mean, this to me, really, this is that they really don't know. Somebody must be withholding this information for some reason.
Well, if you look in the scientific literature, there's just multiple studies, very elaborately done studies that prove this, almost beyond a shadow of doubt. And they've done it multiple ways. Like I say, they do it in experimental animals of every type. Every species will develop obesity. So it's not just something particular to a rat or a mouse. Every species of animal that's ever been tried on, it produces the gross obesity. The way it does it is that it damages an area of the hypothalamus of the brain that is known to produce gross obesity. And that area of the brain is the most sensitive place in the entire nervous system to glutamate. Excitotoxicity. So we have a mechanism worked out. We know how it does it. We know that it does it in every species of animal. And ironically, humans are the most sensitive to MSG toxicity of any known animal species in the world. We are 20 times more sensitive than a monkey or the primate, and we're 5 times more sensitive than the rat, which is the next most sensitive animal of all the species of animals. So humans have the unfortunate position of being the most sensitive of all species to MSG toxicity that will produce gross obesity, type 2 diabetes, and metabolic syndrome. Yet despite this wealth of research proving this, no one's telling the public. Why? Because there are literally billions of dollars being made by the food industry and the makers of MSG food additives that have a tremendous influence on the media. Now, this is not speculation. This is proven. They advertise in virtually every magazine, every newspaper, every television station, and they spend literally millions, hundreds of millions of dollars every year making sure that all of these magazines, journals, TV, and media outlets are dependent on their advertising dollars. And so, since these media outlets don't want to lose that advertising money...
Hold that thought right there.
About it.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he's just been talking about the relationship between MSG and other glutamates and cytotoxins, among which are NutraSweet, and this pathological obesity. And he points out that human beings are much more sensitive than any other animal. I mean, we're 5 times more sensitive to these products than a rat, 20 times than you would be if you were a monkey. We are extremely sensitive to this, and we know what it does in the animals. We have Dr. Olney's studies. Dr. Olney had done this in 1970, again in 1980, feeding aspartame and MSG to rats. found that, of course, they had these pathological lesions in their hypothalamus, and when they grew up, they were excessively obese. Now, the FDA knew this, and, of course, they fought the legalization of certainly aspartame in this country for 16 years. And then along came Donald Rumsfeld in 1981 and called in all of his markers, got his man into the head of the FDA, added aspartame to our diets. And, of course, I don't know about MSG. Was MSG pretty widely used before Donald Rumsfeld took over, or was that were more limited use at that time? Do you recall?
Well, MSG had its origin in 1945 after the war. The Japanese were putting it in their rations, and the Quartermaster Corps examined it, found out that it tasted so much better than ours, and so after the war, they met with all the major food manufacturers to reveal to them what they had discovered, that they could make rations taste delicious, then it would help our food industry. So all the major food manufacturers were given this secret. And so that's when it started. Now, the amount of MSG added to food has doubled every decade since then. So now we're just adding huge amounts. Now, one of the studies that was funded by the federal government admitted that the amount of MSG and other excitotoxins in infant formula was equal to what was producing these lesions in the brains of these experimental animals, and that it would produce the very same problems, the obesity, the diabetes, the metabolic syndrome, and all the other endocrine disruptions associated with this damage. So they knew it. This first was discovered in 1957 and then in 1969 by Dr. Olney. And so the amount of research now has just exploded. There's literally thousands of papers on MSG toxicity to the brain and to other organ systems. Well, they've recently discovered that there's also these same receptors in the pancreas, in the lungs, in the heart, in the ovaries, in the entire GI tract, in the liver, so in the adrenal glands. So all of these glands contain the very same glutamate receptors that the brain has, so that when you consume this glutamate in your food in high concentrations, it also activates all of these cells and can burn them out and damage them. That information is beginning to grow. We're saying that you can induce the diabetes because the glutamate burns out the insulin-producing cells of the pancreas. Well, this has always been known, the reason for diabetes and type 2 diabetes. It's been known to be the cause of type 1 diabetes. And so here you have the exact physiological mechanism for production of that damage. And yet no one's telling the general public. They have them just eating tons of this stuff, feeding it to their kids. And I'd say, here's a child eating a hot dog. Hot dog generally has MSG in it, and it has the nitrites in it, the nitrosamine. And so here they're getting two substances in the hot dog that has been shown to produce this damage to the pancreas, and yet mothers are feeding their children tons of hot dogs every year. It's just unconscionable that the USDA and the FDA and every other outlet, media outlet in this country, is not telling the American public you are destroying the lives of your children by feeding them this contaminated junk.
And I think that's so amazing. And I actually got hold of those articles by Dr. Olney in 1969 and 1980. And there's no question that it's repeated over and over again. This is well known in the scientific literature. And yet, of course, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the liberal and conservative media, and nobody's going to tell the American people this. They're just going to keep saying, look at all those fat people. Oh, my goodness, look at all those fat people. Well, what we've got to do, of course, is get them exercising more. When you're actually poisoning them with these products, and they disguise the MSG by its name, because actually when you read Dr. Blaylock's material, you'll get the names of all the strange names they give to MSG so that you won't know it's in there. And the same thing is true with aspartame as well. These are toxic products. They poison the body. They create all sorts of problems, among which are, of course, diabetes and pathological obesity. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Dr. Blaylock, and we're going to develop not only the problem, but what do you do about it? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock. Russell, go ahead and pick up the story from there, because this is so disturbing to me as I see how they're using the propaganda, how we, on the news all across America, they're saying, oh, isn't it terrible that people are so fat? And, of course, I'm sure the people who put those out don't understand, but the people who are leading this whole campaign against obesity know, and they're just not telling the American people that we're poisoning them and we're poisoning their children.
Well, they're deceiving the American public. You know, when I was a child, we ate absolutely tons of sugar, candy all the time, Cokes all the time. We were all thin. You know, there was just a rare that you would see the obese child as a playmate or in your school. Most were thin. All of us were thin. Everybody in my family was thin. So it wasn't a matter of high consumption of sugars and carbohydrates, because you couldn't have eaten any more than I did. The problem is the amount of excitotoxin exposure through the food has increased so enormously in recent times. Children are being exposed to infinitely larger amounts of this MSG and excitotoxin food additives than ever before. And it's because mothers don't cook like they used to. We used to get fresh food at all our meals. We even had our own garden out in the back and raise most of our own vegetables. But today, we see that mothers are going out and buying hot dogs and buying processed meat, buying prepared dinners, all of which are just filled with this excitotoxic additive. So the children are getting doses that equal or exceed what we're producing the damage in the experimental animals, and they're infinitely more sensitive to it than the animals were. So it's no wonder. I'm not surprised at all. In fact, in the 1970s, I read an article on an international neurosciences conference, and they asked Dr. Olney, the foreign neuroscientist, could the obesity that's beginning to appear in America be due to the fact y'all consume so much foods containing excitotoxins? And he said, well, it's certainly possible. And that was just the beginning of this obesity epidemic. But the Europeans at the time weren't eating very much of the excitotoxin. They were eating more fresh foods than we were. So we see it's directly proportional to the amount of these junk foods that are filled with these excitotoxin additives. So they recognized it back then at a neurosciences conference over 30 years ago. So, you know, I'm not surprised now that I see that these children are looking just like these experimental animals. It's no surprise whatsoever.
And of course, the instance of the thing is that if you have diabetes, your incidence of a cardiovascular disease goes up 500%. I mean, this is the disaster. And more of our people, of course, are going to have the complications of diabetes, because everything we're doing as far as our diet is actually promoting it. And they know full well that the things that we've talked about, first of all, in type 1 diabetes, the things that precipitate the type 1 diabetes, the vaccines, certainly the MSG, the products, things that you're going to find in the hot dogs and things like that. And then, of course, the viruses. We can't do very much about those viruses that they're going to get that tend to precipitate type 1 diabetes in the people with the predisposition. Is there anything we can do to prevent that aspect of it?
Well, we actually know that a couple of things increases the viral damage. One is MSG. It's known very well that if you feed animals MSG, the viral titer, that is the number of viruses in the animal, goes up precipitously. If you expose the animal to mercury, the number of viruses goes up precipitously. So these are things that we see in the American population. You know, we have over 180 million people carrying around mercury amalgam in their teeth. They're getting mercury vaccines constantly. They're breathing mercury in the air, and they're eating fish with mercury in it. So they're getting all of this mercury, which is known to increase the proliferation of viruses, and increasing the damage caused by the viruses, And MSG does the very same thing.
And, of course, we're giving our newborns within a few hours of birth in the nursery, at least up until recently, hepatitis B that had something like 85 times the hepatitis B vaccine that had 85 times the maximum allowable, daily allowable dose of mercury, and they knew it was in there. Now, they tell us it's been taken out, but I'm not sure that I really trust them, but be that as it may, they're still leaving it in the vaccines, the influenza vaccine. And they tell you, if you love your child, why you be sure they get their influenza vaccine shot, knowing full well it has a very, very high toxic dose of mercury. So all of these things are going to have an impact on the child and their predisposition to diabetes.
Oh, exactly. You know, and when you look at the risk of heart attack and stroke in a diabetic, it's 2 to 4 times higher than a normal population. In black people, it's even higher than that. And we know that virtually all people who have metabolic syndrome and diabetes have arteriosclerosis, and that 80% of these people will die with a myocardial infarction as a heart attack. So we're talking about one of the leading or the leading cause of heart attack and stroke in the United States. Well, what is the medical profession's answer? Well, let's put all diabetics automatically on statin drugs. It's not to correct their metabolic problem by changing their diet and adding some supplements that we know reverse this. It's given this toxic drug that produces dementia and may promote cancer growth and cancer development. That's the answer to this problem, is we put everybody on this very dangerous drug.
All right, fine. Well, then let's get into actually how we can go about treating this, because there are lots of things that can be done to alter the metabolic state. And, of course, if people will do it and start taking action now, why, they can stave off both the diabetes and the complications of diabetes. So why don't you pick it up from there?
You know, one of the things that we discuss is that it's the internal fat that seems to be one of the major triggers for producing this type 2 diabetes, and that you can control that by losing weight. Now, there's a fat called CLA, conjugated linoleic acid, which you can get in any health food store. This has been shown to dramatically reduce fat. So even people that have difficulty losing weight will lose it. And it's recently been found that even MSG obesity, which is very hard to lose the weight, if you put the animals on CLA, they'll lose that fat. So CLA is one way to lose the internal fat. We know also that all of the complications of diabetes are produced by free radicals and lipid peroxidation. Well, the answer there is diabetics should all be on high-dose antioxidants. That is your vitamins, particularly vitamin C and vitamin E, selenium. Magnesium is very important because it's an antioxidant and it's anti-inflammatory and it protects against excitotoxicity. So magnesium is very important. All diabetics are deficient in magnesium. Most are severely deficient in magnesium. We know that magnesium concentration in the blood vessels is directly proportional to the degree of arteriosclerosis and so heart attack and stroke. The higher the magnesium, the less arteriosclerosis. So that's another way to help prevent the serious complications of diabetes.
And doesn't that actually help the heart so it doesn't tend to go into arrhythmias as much?
Exactly. And if we look at the number one cause of death in people who have a heart attack, it's arrhythmia. The ones with the lowest magnesium are the ones most likely to die after their first heart attack. The ones with the highest magnesium have much smaller amount of damage to their heart muscle, they're more likely to survive and they're more likely to return to normal function after their heart attack. So it not only can prevent it, but even if you have it, it significantly improves your ability to recover and survive a heart attack. So, you know, that's a couple of things there. Now, if you get into the real biochemistry of diabetes, we look at the kidney damage as one of the major types of damage in diabetics. As I said, it's the leading cause of the loss of kidneys in the United States and the reason for kidney transplants and dialysis. That begins very early in the metabolic condition, long before people even know they have it. Now, the antioxidants protect the kidneys, and we know that one of the things that particularly protects kidneys is quercetin. which is a flavonoid. You can buy it in any health food store. It is very protective of the kidney against the damage by diabetes. We also know that one of the other big areas of damage in diabetes is what we call microvascular damage. That is, the very small blood vessels are injured by the diabetic process, mainly through free radicals. Quercetin and curcumin have been found to significantly reduce that damage. Microvascular damage is a major reason for damage to kidneys and to the nerves. You know, diabetics frequently get numb feet, and then they'll develop ulcerations and vascular disease, and that's why they lose their legs. Quercetin and curcumin has been shown to significantly reverse that and prevent it from ever happening. The other advantage of the flavonoids, that is, all of these things like quercetin and curcumin and lutein and apigenin and hesperidin, which are commonly found in vegetables and fruits, their advantage is that they also lower blood sugar and they improve insulin function at the cell, the very problem that's in the diabetic. So the higher the intake of these flavonoids, the better the insulin works at the cell, and so it helps clear the very problem at its source.
Now, are we going to get the flavonoids in our vegetables and our fruits?
Well, you'll get a lot of them. You know, your best is if you grow them yourself.
Right.
If you get them shipped across country, you're going to have less of them. But you're still going to get a large amount of flavonoids in your vegetables, particularly your cruciferous vegetables like cauliflower and Brussels sprouts and...
How about broccoli?
Broccoli. All these things are very kale, and they're very high in the flavonoids. So those are the ones you need to concentrate on. Make sure you're eating at least 5 to 10 servings a day. If you do, then you dramatically reduce your risk of ever developing the metabolic syndrome, far less diabetes. If you already have it, it'll dramatically improve your insulin function, help you get over it so you can get off all of these medications. Now, they found that vitamin C and vitamin E, particularly in combination, significantly improves diabetic function. About 1,000 milligrams of C a day seems to do the trick, and about 400 to 800 units of natural form vitamin E also tends to do it. Now, vitamin E is particularly important because it protects all of the cell membranes in your body, and that's where a lot of the damage occurs. They found that a substance that's common in the body called alpha-lipoic acid, it's one of our major antioxidants in all the cells and tissues of our body. It has some unique functions. It improves insulin function at the cell. That is, it can drive the glucose into the cell. It lowers the insulin secretion, which that's what you want. It protects all cells against free radical damage and lipid peroxidation, lowers the iron level in these tissues, which is important. And so alpha-lipoic acid is one of the major ways to correct type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Generally, what I recommend is what's called the R form of lipoic acid. The R form is the functional form. And it lowers the blood sugar significantly. I tell diabetics they should take about 100 milligrams before meals, that is 3 times a day, and then if they need more, add it in 50 milligram increments until they get to the point where their blood sugar is normal. Particularly if you add that plus the diet, plus the other vitamins and flavonoids, most diabetics can either get off their medication completely or they'll take much lower doses than they're having to take, and they'll significantly protect themselves against every one of these diseases we've talked about.
And how different that is when I was practicing medicine, because we used to put everybody on the insulin, or certainly a medicine that acted like the insulin.
Right, and the problem is that you're already getting too much insulin.
And that was something that is only, what has it been, 20 years or so they've realized that?
Yeah, I remember when I was in medical school, they would talk about the type 1 diabetics, the insulin-dependent diabetics that would become resistant, and no matter how much insulin you gave them, it didn't work. And they didn't know why, and then later they discovered insulin resistance.
That was type 2 diabetes.
Right, and so, you know, the problem was not to keep giving them more insulin, it was to correct the metabolic problem through the diet and the supplements. And if you did that, then you can stop pumping them full of insulin. And let the pancreas settle down, and they return to normal.
Does MSG continue poisoning the pancreas? You know, even once you've got the diabetes, if you keep taking MSG, does it continue to aggravate the problem?
Well, it'll burn out the insulin-producing cells completely, so they don't work at all. Once they're completely burned out, then you're always going to be insulin-dependent. So you want to stop it before it gets to that stage. And you want to get the MSG out of your food. Now, what's going to happen with the way they're increasing the glutamate in foods, these children, by the time they're 30 or 40 years old, we're just going to have this massive epidemic of the metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes, much greater than we even have now. You know, you can just see that on the horizon.
And, of course, this is increasing so much in our children. We never saw the degree of this type 2 diabetes in the children, you know, that we're seeing today.
It was extremely rare. I mean, you very rarely saw diabetes of the type 2 form less than age 45, 50-year-olds. Most of it was in the middle-age group. The idea that that young children were developing type 2 diabetes was a shock to the entire medical community. It just rarely happens.
But do you think the average doctor has any idea about these things? Because this is not being published in the average medical journal that he's going to be reading, is it?
No, and he's not going to take the time to research this. I mean, most of this is in the diabetes journals. It's in the research of diabetes journals. It's in you know, all of the basic science journals that are the scientists that are actually studying how insulin works, how it's secreted. These are the journals that doctors don't read. They're not going to read research journals, and they're not going to read this basic studies being done. They read things like New England Journal of Medicine and the Annals of Internal Medicine and Journal of the AMA. That's the things they read because they're mostly clinical studies, and they're not going to look at these things. Those journals pretty much avoid all of that, stay away from it, never mention it.
Well, before we get to the end of this hour, and since we'll be losing some of our listeners, I want to tell our listeners that Dr. Blaylock writes a medical a letter, and I think that you ought to know how to get it. And it's amazing. There's a lot of great information in there. And let's see, I gave you that number. Let's see. Do you remember the 800 number that I gave you?
Yeah, I have it. It's 1-800-485-4350.
All right, this is put out by Newsmax. They actually published a Russell's letter. If you're interested in it, I just subscribed to it and got all the back ones, so I would be able to carry out a halfway intelligent conversation this evening. And it really is fascinating. And most of the things we've covered this evening are there. Give that 800 number once again.
It's 1-800-485-4350.
All right, Brian, it comes in over the Internet. It's very inexpensive. You'll get it once a month. And I think that we're on the 11th or 12th letter right now. I got them all because I wanted to have the back ones. And I think if you're interested in that, why, you want to get it, you want to read it, you want to understand. The significant part that MSG and the other excitotoxins like NutraSweet play in poisoning the body, and of course specifically poisoning our children. And you would think that somebody would tell them, but the FDA, of course, has said, after fighting this for 16 years before Donald Rumsfeld came along in 1981, got his man in, and got the NutraSweet legalized, and of course the MSG was there before, but certainly this information is well known, the scientific studies are there. And why aren't the people learning about that? And why are we emphasizing obesity and never mention what we're talking about tonight? Well, again, to our listeners, certainly you can get copies of our program this evening. It's available through Radio Liberty. But if you want to get the letter specifically on diabetes with the information we're talking about, why it's there. And so really the solution is a good diet, and it's a proper diet, and we just want to go ahead and pick up where I interrupted you there.
Well, there's some other things that people need to know about. The coenzyme Q10 has also been shown to lower blood sugar in diabetics. Chromium is very important, particularly in the type 2 diabetes. A dose of about 500 micrograms, as much as 1,000 micrograms a day, has been shown to significantly improve the insulin function in that type 2 diabetes, so a significant number of them return to normal. Now, that was actually discovered in China. Chinese scientists did that, found out they could cure most of their type 2 diabetics, and finally the American scientists began to look at it, and sure enough, it worked. So, you know, these type of things, they can make a lot of difference, and there's ways to prevent the nerve damage, like N-acetyl-L-cysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, dramatically improves the nerve damage in diabetics. They need to be on high-dose B vitamins to protect and repair their nerves. This also has been shown in numerous studies in human patients. So, you know, people need to know that.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with our special guest, this Dr. Russell Blaylock. Now, he's going to be with us for the second hour. We're going to be talking on a different subject. But that time, we're going to be talking about cancer prevention. But just hang on. We'll just wrap up the program here in just a moment or two. Okay, well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we've got, Russell, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up this part of the program.
Well, I think what people need to do is start searching things out for themselves. Get this, if you have diabetes or metabolic syndrome or your children's obese, you need to get this newsletter, read it over, and it'll explain to you why these things happen, what to do about it. And that's what you need to do. You need to take care of yourself and your family and look after them.
And I think it's so important that if you're buying prepared food at the store, you learn of all the names that they hide the MSG under. Hydrolyzed, well, my wife knows all of them. Fortunately, she reads the labels, and I know very well when they come home. They're not going to have MSG, but they will, what do they call them, soy products and hydrolyzed vegetable products and all of these things. But they're all names to hide the fact that they have MSG in them, which is an excitotoxin, which, of course, it attacks the brain and attacks the pancreas and attacks so many organs in the body. And is known to do that. And yet they're allowing it in our foods right along with the aspartame, the NutraSweet products, which of course is an excitotoxin, and it actually damages the brain. And in fact, in animals, it's known to actually produce lesions in the brain. Is there any relationship between these products and the Parkinson's disease and the dementia and the other things we see increasing in our society?
Oh, yes. In fact, they've directly measured elevation of the glutamate and the part of the brain that produces Parkinson's disease when you feed animals MSG. So we know it directly penetrates that part of the brain. And that part of the brain is specifically sensitive to high doses of glutamate in the diet. And we know that Parkinson's disease, like Alzheimer's, is produced by excessive excitotoxicity in those brain cells. So the connection to MSG and other food additives is very strong. Now, we're not saying that it's the cause of the disease, but it is certainly something that greatly aggravates the disease. And if you have a genetic weakness for the disease, then you're more likely to get it if you're consuming a lot of these in your diet. So that's the connection. And we're consuming such huge amounts that we're seeing an increase in all of these diseases. Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's is just growing by leaps and bounds. And they're estimating just huge numbers of cases in the future. And the frightening thing, we're seeing it at much earlier ages than we used to. Instead of in the 70s and 80s, we're starting to see it in the 40s and 50s, both of these diseases. And this certainly would help explain it.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Bill on the line from Coeur d'Alene. We'll try to get to him as we wrap up this program here. But our guest has been, of course, Dr. Russell Blaylock. And you really want to get his Blaylock Wellness Report. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I really need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there and you listen to our programs and you realize you're going to hear things here you're not going to hear elsewhere, so we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And, of course, if you'd like to contact us, our number is 1-800-544-8927. Now, we do carry three of Dr. Blaylock's books, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, which is a great, great big book. It's got a wealth of information in it and goes into vaccinations and certainly goes into mercury and into fluoride, into NutraSweet, into general nutrition, and of course the relationship to antioxidants, to cancer, all sorts of things. I would say that probably of all the books, other than my own book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we sell more copies of Dr. Blaylock's book than any other single book. If you know people who have cancer, his Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients is a must a book, because if you're going to even have conventional treatment, there are lots of things that you can do that will help yourself and will avoid some of the terrible illness that comes with chemotherapy and radiation therapy, things that you can take that so that you won't get so sick and all of the other complications. As far as the excitotoxins and the MSG and NutraSweet, why, we carry his book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. That's Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. We have a four-tape set of my interviews with Dr. Blaylock called Life-Saving Secrets. And we recommend all of these to you. There's a wealth of information here that you need. And believe me, in this day and age, you can't look to the government to protect you. You can't look even to your doctor, because your doctor means well. But so much of the information we're putting out here are things that I never learned when I was practicing medicine, because, you know, I was reading the medical journals that were financed by some of the people who created the problem. And so much of this information is not available to the doctor. You need to get educated, and you need to reach your doctor, because he can reach so many people. So, again, that's the Natural Health Strategies for Cancer Patients, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, the three books, and the four-tape set, Life-Saving Secrets. Let's go to Bill quickly, calling in from Coeur d'Alene. Bill, do you have a quick question?
Yeah, just real quickly, is MSG in soy sauce and Parmesan cheese the type that's sold by Kraft?
Did you have any idea, Russell?
Yeah, soy sauce has extremely high levels of glutamate in it. In fact, in a 25-year study in Hawaii, that's what was led to the greatest amount of brain atrophy and dementia. So soy sauce is a big culprit. The other was the Parmesan cheese. It naturally has high glutamate. When it's processed and you eat high amounts of Parmesan cheese, you're going to get a lot of glutamate, and yes, it can precipitate these problems.
So glutamate is basically tantamount to MSG?
Yeah, well, the MSG is just a sodium salt of glutamate. It's not the sodium that causes the problem, it's the glutamate.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so for calling. And then, of course, for our listeners out across America, remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then please remember our website. It's RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. You can go there. You can listen to our programs 5 hours every day, every weekday. And, of course, you can then go to the archives after that. You won't get anything accomplished, but you'll sure get a lot of information you're not going to get from regular channels. Your job is, of course, to tell others about our programs and encourage them to listen. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. Most people really don't understand. You've got to be awfully evil to suppress the sort of information we're talking about today. And believe me, the people who forced NutraSweet onto our children, onto our adults, knowing full well its toxic effects, well, some of those people are involved in this terrible and senseless war we're involved in over in Iraq. Pray for America, pray for revival, and pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Dr. Russell Blaylock. And Dr. Blaylock was a neurosurgeon for many years, practiced in Jackson, Mississippi. And in recent years, of course, he's dedicating himself full-time to researching what's really going on in medicine. There's a tremendous amount of research that's been done. And a lot of this has been funded by the government on part of the war on cancer. How can we prevent the cancer? Are there any nutritional aspects to the onset of cancer? What leads to the cancer? And but, of course, the average doctor never hears about this research because, well, for whatever reason, and I could speculate, I would have the reasons why I believe it's true, but certainly I think it's so important that we understand that the average doctor is not aware of much of what you're going to hear in this hour. You need to get the education, and you need to help him understand. Well, that is background. Russell, why don't you pick up the story?
Well, when we talk about cancer, you know, we spent, I guess, close to $100 billion on this war on cancer. And like most wars the government has launched, they've been failures. We did not cure cancer. None of the major cancers were cured during this war. But what we did gain from that enormous expenditure of money was a much better understanding of the cancer process. What happens to normal cells that makes them become cancerous? And that's important in that it had no benefits in terms of traditional medicine. But in the field of nutrition, we now understand why it is that people that eat a lot of vegetables and fruits have a 50% lower incidence of cancer than everybody else. And why, when people avoid certain types of foods, like the omega-6 oils, high calcium from milk intake, why they have much lower cancer rates than the people that consume these foods. What we've understood is that cancer cells are very special. What happens to a normal cell is it will divide about 50 times and then stop dividing, and it'll die, or it'll just arrest itself at that point and quit dividing. What happens in a cancer cell is that it just keeps dividing. It becomes immortal. It'll divide forever. It also quits communicating with the cells around it. Normally, cells talk to each other. So if a cell begins to divide too much, its neighbors will send a signal and tell it to quit dividing, and it'll stop dividing. But a cancer cell doesn't listen to instructions from anybody. It becomes an anarchist. And so the cell just divides and divides and divides, spreads all over the body, and eventually will kill you. And we now understand how that process works and what makes that cell become immortal. Well, we know that there are numerous things. For instance, viruses can cause cancer, exposure to radiation, pesticides, herbicides, industrial chemicals, hereditary cancers can occur. All of these things have been known to cause cancer, but the common link between all of them is that they all produce chronic inflammation. And when we look at cancer patients, and I don't know why it took them so long to finally do this study, but they took a look at a large number of cancer patients, and they found that 70% of them had chronic inflammatory diseases for 10 to 17 years before they developed a cancer. So they had this smoldering chronic inflammation going on in their body that eventually produced the cancer. So why did inflammation produce the cancer? Well, when you become inflamed, you're producing lots and lots of free radicals. And these free radicals are bombarding your DNA. And this damage into the DNA begins to accumulate. Well, if you get a certain pattern of damage to that DNA, the cell will become immortal. That is, it becomes cancerous. And so until that DNA damage occurs in that certain pattern, which takes about that 10 to 17-year period, then the cell will become immortal and become a full-blown cancer. So the secret seems to be chronic inflammation. So whatever causes chronic inflammation, whether you're diabetic, you have some other disease, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, irritable bowel syndrome, ulcerative colitis, all of these inflammatory diseases, they produce cancer, and they're known to have very high cancer rates. For instance, people with rheumatoid arthritis have a very high cancer rate. People with lupus have a very high cancer rate. And people with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease have very high cancer rates, the GI tract, the colon. And now it makes sense. We understand why. Well, the advantage that we have of nutrition is that nutrition supplies us with some very powerful anti-inflammatory substances. We know our vitamins, certain vitamins like vitamin C and vitamin E and selenium and magnesium and zinc inhibit inflammation. But there are even more powerful substances in fruits and vegetables called flavonoids. They are very powerful inhibitors of inflammation. Certain extracts of spices, for instance, curcumin, which comes from the spice turmeric, is a very powerful inhibitor of inflammation. And all of these substances are now being found to be extremely powerful at inhibiting the development of cancer. And if you already have cancer, it significantly will suppress that cancer or kill the cancer cell. And we've seen cures in a number of terminally ill patients who have switched to a very high diet of these flavonoid compounds. When they're taking in a lot of them, the cancers start disappearing, and we've seen some rather miraculous cures in people that have been told they had months to live. I've treated several of these patients myself who came into my office, and they looked terrible. They were walking with a cane and barely able to get around, and the doctor told them they had no more than a month or two to live. We put them on the diet, and a year later they have more energy than they ever had in their whole life and feel great. And all the pain goes away, the tumors start disappearing. Now, this doesn't occur in everybody, but in a substantial number of people this will occur. And now we understand why, because of the operation of these flavonoids in cancer cells. Now, basically what cancer cells do is they take over the cell, they make the cell produce enzymes that make the cell reproduce.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking about the origins of cancer. And basically what happens is these cells begin producing specific enzymes. The cells have been really barraged for a long time by the free radicals. And then they begin to just divide and divide, and they don't ordinarily stop dividing. But Dr. Blaylock has been saying that there are certain things in a diet, certain types of flavonoids and other things that you can actually eat that many times will actually slow down or sometimes even reverse cancers. Now, that sounds pretty radical, but I talked to the gentleman, actually a fellow, who's been prescribing the Hallelujah diet for 30 years. It's basically the sort of diet that Dr. Blaylock's been talking about. My friend Dr. Lorraine Day has been prescribing a diet probably for at least a decade now, and she herself had metastatic breast carcinoma and has made a complete recovery, and many of the people who followed her advice have had dramatic improvements. Now, this is not going to work for everybody, but certainly many people who would ordinarily be written off by traditional medicine have changed their diet and had dramatic improvements. So you pick up the story there.
Right, and as you said, certain things that we know cancer cells do, cancers will make that cell start producing special enzymes that allow the cell to reproduce. One of these enzymes, for instance, ornithine decarboxylase, when they looked at it, in benign tumors, that enzyme was 30 times more active than a normal cell, but it was 100 times more active in a cancer cell. And the interesting thing is that these nutrients that I spoke about, the curcumin and quercetin and hesperidin, inhibit that enzyme. They slow it down so that it can't produce the growth that cancer cell needs. Another one is tyrosine kinase enzyme. This enzyme allows cancer cells to invade and spread throughout the body. Right now, all the pharmaceutical companies are in this mad search to find drugs that will inhibit tyrosine kinase. Well, a larger number of nutrients significantly inhibit tyrosine kinase. Curcumin, quercetin, hesperidin, lutein, apigenin, green tea extract, resveratrol, silymarin, all of these powerfully inhibit these enzymes. So we already have things that can inhibit the enzymes. When you add them all together, you get even a more powerful effect. We also know that these very same nutrients prevent the cells from dividing. And we know that normal cells, if they become damaged and they can't be repaired, they activate what we call suicide genes. These suicide genes will kill the cell so that it cannot become a cancer. But what cancer cells do is they'll turn off that suicide gene so the cell can't kill itself and they become immortal. Well, we found that some of these very same nutrients will turn that suicide gene back on and make the cell spontaneously kill itself. This is another thing the pharmaceutical companies have been in a mad rush to try to find, is drugs that will make cells kill themselves. Well, we already have it. These plant extracts will kill abnormal cells. Now, they have no effect on normal cells. In fact, they make normal cells more healthy. They protect the normal cells. And this is the advantage, which I discuss in detail in my cancer book. This is the advantage of using these nutrient methods in cancer patients who decide to use conventional treatment, is they protect the normal cells against the damaging effect of radiation and chemotherapy, and at the same time they dramatically increase the sensitivity of the cancer cell to the chemotherapy and radiation treatments. Now, most oncologists are not aware of that. They'll tell their cancer patients just the opposite. I've even had them tell cancer patients, don't eat any vegetables, it might interfere with your treatment. They believe that their drugs work only by producing free radicals in cancer cells. But what we find out is that the flavonoids and vitamins don't reduce the free radical generation in cancer cells, only in normal cells. And then by all these other mechanisms, they help kill the cancer cells. So they're almost what we call a magic bullet. If they target only cancer cells, they help destroy cancer cells, and they protect normal cells.
You know, I think one of the most difficult things for people to think of in their minds, but, certainly every cell is controlled by the genes within it, and they're all little switches, off, on, off, on, and there's certain genes, if you can turn them on, why they'll protect the cell. If you turn them off, why, of course, the cancer will come back again. So, what you need to do is figure out how you can mobilize, various drugs to affect these genes. And this is what resveratrol, some of these other things will do, is actually manipulate the genes within your cells to stop them from reproducing and from becoming immortal. And then, of course, from spreading these immortal cells. Once they get into your system, of course, they'll spread throughout your whole body. So we have, at least increasing knowledge about how to reverse this cancer process. Go ahead, Russell.
Right. And, a couple other things that the pharmaceutical companies in this mad dash to find and have not been very successful. And one is that we know when cancers start growing, even when they're so small you cannot see them with the naked eye, the cancer cells will start stimulating your body to produce a lot of little blood vessels. And that's because the cancer is growing so fast it needs a lot of blood supply. If it doesn't get that blood supply, it'll never develop. It'll reach a certain stage and die. So it's the development of those abnormal cancer blood vessels is very important. Well, the drug companies are developing drugs to try to produce what we call an anti-angiogenesis effect. In other words, destroy those blood vessels. Well, there are numerous nutrients that do the very same thing. For instance, green tea extract, curcumin, resveratrol, silymarin from milk thistle extract. All of these powerfully inhibit this angiogenesis effect. DHA, which is from omega-3 oils, the fish oils, powerfully inhibits that angiogenesis effect. When you combine all of these together, you get a really powerful anti-angiogenesis effect. Vitamin E succinate also does the same thing. So that's why I say when you design a nutritional program with all this in mind from what we know, you can inhibit these important processes that are absolutely necessary for cancer to grow and spread. Now, another important area in cancer research is what we call the metalloproteinase enzymes. These enzymes dissolve the tissue around the cancer so that cancer can invade and spread throughout the body. That cancer is very, very dependent on those enzymes. If it does not cause those enzymes to erode into the surrounding tissue, the cancer cannot spread. It won't go anywhere. So the pharmaceutical companies are looking ways to inhibit those enzymes. Well, we know that the flavonoids powerfully inhibit those enzymes. So does DHA from omega-3 fatty acids. They will suppress that enzyme so that the cancer has great difficulty trying to spread to other parts of the body. So the sooner you're on these nutrients, the less likely it is that your cancer will spread. So there's just a numerous ways, which I go through in the book, that nutrients affect it. Now, we also know the immune system plays a major role in preventing cancer and in getting rid of cancer if you develop it. We have what we call immune surveillance. And that's a system where you have certain cells in your immune system that travel throughout your body. And what they're looking for is any cell that's starting to transform into a cancer. If it finds these cells, it immediately kills them. And that way it's always cleaning your body of potential cancer cells or newly developed cancer cells so you never develop cancer. For instance, we know that a large number of women will have cancer cells in their breast by age 45. But most women don't develop breast cancer. And that's because the immune system is always suppressing those cancers. In men, we know that age 70, about 70% of men will have cancer cells in their prostate gland. Yet most men are not going to develop prostate cancer. And again, it's because the immune system suppresses it. Now, if something happens to your immune system, at this stage, then the cancer can grow without any interference whatsoever. And we know that if, for instance, when you purposely suppress the immune system, like in transplant patients, they have a very high cancer rate. Diseases that are associated with suppressed immunity have very high cancer rates, much higher than the normal public. So that tells us how important that immune system is. The opposite is also true. If you stimulate those cells that produce the immunity against cancer, people have very low cancer rates or rarely develop cancer. And that's why you can see some people who smoke for 50 years and never develop cancer. It's because they have very powerful immune systems. And I would put a note in there that nicotine from cigarettes is an immune suppressant. That's one of the reasons it causes cancer. It suppresses the immune system. But we know things in their diet suppress the immune system, like omega-6 oil. That's corn oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, peanut oil, soybean oil, canola oil. All those oils powerfully inhibit the immune system. And that allows cancers to grow like wildfire. I call those oils cancer fertilizer. We know sugar suppresses the immune system. So people that eat a lot of sugar have much higher cancer rates. People that eat desserts regularly every day have about 190% increase in cancer. So all of this makes sense because you're suppressing that immune system. Now, there are other ways to stimulate the immune system. For instance, beta-glucan, which is a supplement you can buy, powerfully stimulates the part of the immune system that suppresses cancer. We also know that vitamin A, particularly type beta-carotene, astaxanthin, stimulates the immune system, particularly in the elderly, and suppresses cancer very powerfully. That's one of the problems with the elderly. After age 50, your immune system starts falling off. And it's purely nutritional. When you add the nutrition, the immune system comes back up to full strength.
And, of course, that's one reason, I'm sure, why older folks like me have a tendency to get cancer. And that's why it's so important that you learn how to keep your immune system stimulated, keep it working. Keep it protecting your body. We'll be right back here in just a moment with our special guest, Dr. Russell Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and pick the story up there, Russell.
Well, and another thing that's very important to prevent cancer and even in treating cancer is DNA repairs. We said the basic process that produces these cancers is a certain pattern of DNA damage that triggers the cancer development. Well, your cells have special enzymes that are constantly repairing your DNA, because from the time of conception to the end of life, your DNA is being damaged by free radicals, lipid peroxidation, background radiation, pesticides, herbicides, metals. All these things are constantly damaging your DNA. But when you're young, these enzymes can repair that DNA almost as fast as it's damaged. So about 90 to 95% of all DNA damage is repaired up until you start to get into the Middle Ages. Now, once you reach about middle age, you start having more difficulty repairing DNA. And again, that's purely nutritional. And it's because as we get older, our nutrition gets worse. So you begin to accumulate DNA damage. So every year, there's a little bit more and a little bit more. So by the time you reach age 70, your risk of cancer has gone up considerably. And that's because your DNA repair enzymes are not working as well. Now, nutritionally, you can significantly stimulate DNA repair. It takes vitamin B6, folic acid, and B12. These three vitamins are what your body uses to repair DNA. One additional vitamin is niacinamide. It also repairs DNA. So if you add all four vitamins, you can significantly boost your ability to repair DNA. Now, when, for instance, they looked at colon cancer, they found people who had the highest folic acid intake had by far the lowest colon cancer rate. When they found people who were at high hereditary risk of colon cancer had the highest folic acid intake, they had cancer rates as low as people who didn't have the hereditary risk. So it's enormously protective against cancer. Even people who already have cancer, if they give them folic acid, it reduces the growth of those cancers. And that's because it helps repair that DNA and prevents the more cells from becoming cancerous. So DNA repair is being found to be extremely important in your development. When we look at breast cancer, for instance, there's a thing called BRCA1, BRCA2, which is defects in DNA repair in women. Well, women who have those two defects, abnormalities in those repair enzymes, have a very high risk of developing breast cancer, and usually do so when they're very young, in their 20s or 30s. And when they develop cancer, it becomes extremely aggressive. Now, of course, the craziest thing you can do is take a woman who's at high risk for breast cancer and tell her to get a mammogram every year. She has very great difficulty in repairing her DNA, and you are blasting that breast tissue with radiation, and it damages the DNA, and the DNA damage cannot be repaired. So you do that, it's estimated anywhere from 1 to 3% increase in breast cancer with a mammogram per year. Well, if you do it for 10 years at 1% increase, that's a 10% increase in breast cancer. If it's 3% per year, it's a 30% increase. Well, women who have poor DNA repair are at the high end. They're 3 to 5% increased risk of developing breast cancer purely from the mammogram every year. So I've seen quite a few women who were very religious because they had the
breast. Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock. He's just talking about how so much of the cancer comes from the problem we have with repairing our DNA. And he points out that there's certain women who, for instance, have difficulty repairing their DNA. They have a tendency towards breast carcinoma. Maybe it runs in the family, but whatever it would be, why, of course, they go in every year for their mammogram. And, of course, whenever you have a mammogram, you're blasting the breast with radiation. And, it may increase the incidence of breast carcinoma rate 1 to 3% a year. Well, if you had this over every year for 10 years, you're talking about increasing it 10 to 13%. But some of these women that really have difficulty repairing their DNA, why the mammogram may increase the incidence of cancer 3 to 5% a year. And so if you're getting the mammograms every year, why, you're really dramatically increasing your chance of getting a cancer simply in the name of trying to find out if you have cancer. So pick up the story there, Russell.
In fact, I've seen several women who were very meticulous about getting that mammogram every year because they had a strong family history of breast cancer. And they developed breast cancer, and it was just so aggressive it killed them very quickly. Didn't respond to any treatment. Now, this has been reported over and over and over, and it's obvious that what you're doing is you're taking a woman who has poor ability to fix her DNA, you're radiating her breast tissue, producing severe damage to the DNA, which is not repaired, and it accumulates until she eventually develops a cancer. And when she does, it is an extremely aggressive cancer, and it becomes fatal. So, you know, my warning to women, if you have a strong family history, do not get a mammogram every year. There are other ways to examine the breast. MRI scans, even just breast exams are just as good. Or thermograms. There's other ways to examine the breast that don't involve radiation that you should do. Because the woman who's at the high family risk, she is the one that's going to be most easily damaged by the DNA. And it is critical that everybody realize radiation damage is accumulative. So that every time you get an X-ray, you accumulate more DNA damage throughout the rest of your life. And we know this from radiation experiments from Hiroshima to outer space radiation to experiments in labs. That radiation damage is accumulative. It continues every year for the end of your life. So that's very important. If you can repair your DNA, if you have very, very good DNA repair, then you have a large measure of protection. And so if you're determined to do the mammogram anyway, you should at least take niacinamide, B6, B12, and folic acid in high doses well before you go to get your mammogram.
Okay, so of course there's so many things that people can do, and Dr. Russell Blaylock has written a two-part letter, and actually Newsmax publishes a letter, and the first part is prevent cancer before it's too late, and then the second part is prevent cancer before it's late, part two. And we're just covering some of the material he covers here. It's so important that you understand that you can do so much to prevent cancer, or once you have it, to help your body respond to that cancer, and many times help to control it through nutrition, and these things are available. But the average physician doesn't read about it because we're told, well, you got to wait till the drug company comes out with this drug. And of course, I personally believe, if you've listened to my programs, that there are treatments that are certainly being withheld. We know that the FDA has done everything they could to block Dr. Brzezinski's treatment, which in certain instances has been very successful. They even wanted to send him to jail, not because he wasn't helping people, but in my opinion, because he was. If you haven't read the book, The Brzezinski Breakthrough, or heard our four tape set on Dr. Brzezinski's treatment, you need to, and then you need to ask yourself, why would the Federal Drug Administration block the use of treatments which save the lives of children with brain cancers? And, well, I'll let Russell pick up the story there.
Well, your major question is, why would they prevent people, parents, from having the choice? Why do they tell parents, you must have this conventional treatment, which has been shown not only to not help at all, but to speed up and assure the death of your child? That's what's so shocking about it, is that, you know, all of these liberals and leftists who are screaming about choice don't want parents to have a choice.
And because when you radiate a child's brain, why, you damage it and be knocked off, what, a quarter of their intelligence, something like that?
Oh, you can produce severe dementia in these children and cranial nerve deficits and blindness. And yet they force the parents to do that to their children.
Before they can have Dr. Brzezinski's treatment, which they know works. Why would you suppress a treatment for cancer that would help children, would help adults? And I'll simply ask you that question, and maybe you can contemplate the answer. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking about prevention of cancer. So you pick up the story from there, Russell.
Yeah, there's a couple of other things people need to know about for instance, iron levels. Doctors just totally ignore the impact of iron on disease. We've talked about diabetes. It was found that people who have high normal levels of iron have the highest rates of diabetes and the highest rates of metabolic syndrome. The same thing has been found for cancer. People who have the highest normal levels, that is, it's within normal range, but it's just the upper limit of normal, they have the highest cancer incidence, and it's significantly higher. We also found, for instance, they did a study in kids with leukemia, and they found that the children who had the highest iron levels had the poorest prognosis, and those with the lowest iron level had the best prognosis. So we know iron plays a major role in cancer. Well, why? Well, we know that cells can't divide if iron is not abundantly available. And this is true of bacteria, viruses, or cancer cells. The faster cells divide, the more iron it needs. Well, one of the body's defenses against cancer and infection is to sequester or hide the iron from the cancer. Now, I've seen quite a few oncologists and oncological surgeons, that is, surgeons who treat cancer, give their patients iron. That's like pouring fertilizer on it. It's going to grow like crazy. And this has been proven in the laboratory. This has been shown in human studies, that if you add iron, you increase the growth of cancer dramatically, and you increase the spread of cancer. Now, even the pharmaceutical companies and other cancer researchers are looking for ways to remove iron from the cancer so that the cancer can't have access to the iron. Now, nutritionally, we know that virtually all of the flavonoids are natural iron chelators. That is, they bind with iron, help prevent its absorption, and help prevent cancer from getting hold of the iron. So flavonoids in plants are excellent ways to help deny iron to cancer cells. There are special supplements like IP6, which was developed by a cancer specialist at the University of Maryland. This natural substance has been found to powerfully bind with iron and prevent its absorption. And it can lower your iron dramatically. And it denies access to the cancer cell as well. So iron is very important. Now, if you're a cancer patient, or if you have a strong family history of cancer, one of the most important things you can do is get an iron level.
Hold that level. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he's been pointing out the fact that one of the things that really stimulates cancer growth is iron, so you want to cut back on the iron. It's sort of like, well, if you want your weeds to grow, you fertilize them. Well, you'd have to be crazy to do something like that. Well, you'd have to be crazy to give a patient with a cancer iron, because iron actually stimulates the cell growth and cell division. And so one of the things that's being done increasingly is to actually give people flavonoids, which tend to bind with the iron and lower the iron levels. And study after study have shown that when you have high iron levels, why your cancer grows. And there have been studies in children he talked about where they showed that the children had high iron levels, why their cancers, what were those, leukemias or what?
Those were leukemias.
Right. So, and then, of course, Dr. Blaylock was just saying, one of the things, if you have a cancer, you want to study and find out what your iron level is. Was that IP6, is that a rice bran that you were speaking of that binds the iron? What's the IP6?
Yeah, it's a phytate. It's found in a lot of grains. Phytates tend to bind iron and prevent its absorption. So they're very important, and it works in infections as well as it does in cancers. Now, you should have your doctor order an iron panel, what they call an iron panel. That gives you an iron, what's called ferritin. Ferritin is the transport protein for iron, total iron binding capacity, and transferrin. Those are the things you need to know to tell you how much iron you have in your body. Now, the optimal amount of iron is to have in the low normal range, certainly slightly below mid-range. In that lower level, your incidence of a lot of diseases, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, cancer, diabetes, is much lower. The higher your iron, if it's in the from mid-range to upper level of normal, then you, all of these diseases are increased in you. And that's because iron triggers free radical generation. Iron is a very powerful catalyst for the development of free radicals. And it triggers chronic inflammation. As we said, all cancers are caused by chronic inflammation and by free radicals. So iron becomes a big culprit there. Now, a similar process can occur with copper excess. So if you're taking in a lot of copper or taking copper supplements, it dramatically increases cancer growth, but not quite as much as iron. Now, another thing that you should have, certainly at some point in your life, is a C-reactive protein. This is a lab test that measures inflammation in your body. Now, if we look at cancer patients and do this test on them, we find that the patients who have significantly elevated C-reactive proteins have the poorest prognosis. They're the least likely to survive. Those with normal C-reactive protein are more likely to survive, just like the iron level.
And don't we even find that in heart disease? Don't we find that the about half of the people with heart attacks have elevated C-reactive proteins?
Right, and it, and of course, an elevated C-reactive protein is a much greater indicator of risk of heart attack and stroke than is an elevated cholesterol.
But of course, they're not going to tell you that because they can't give you something for to treat your C-reactive protein. So they're going to sell you the statin drugs.
Right, there's no drug for a C-reactive protein.
Now, why don't you explain why people have an elevated C-reactive protein? This is a sign that's of inflammation in the body. And would this be chronic infections that are producing that? Or would this be exposure to toxic substances or what?
Well, anything that causes inflammation in the body will elevate the C-reactive protein, whether it be a chemical or a virus or a chronic bacterial infection, cancer, diabetes, any kind of chronic inflammatory disorder or exposure will produce an elevated C-reactive protein. If it's elevated, that produces a very high risk of a number of diseases, arteriosclerosis, stroke, heart attack, cancer, diabetes, degenerative brain disorders. All these things are increased once you have chronic inflammation. That's just a way to measure it. The higher it is, if you have cancer, then the less likely that you're going to control your cancer. Now, what we find is there's a very easy way to lower C-reactive protein, and that is, again, the flavonoids, certain vitamins like vitamin E, vitamin C, selenium, zinc. All of these things lower C-reactive protein, particularly your flavonoids and vitamin E and vitamin C. They are very powerful. The omega-3 oils, particularly the DHA, can lower the C-reactive protein because it reduces inflammation. So anything that reduces inflammation, which is these major nutrients, curcumin, quercetin, hesperidin, they're all powerful inhibitors of the C-reactive protein, and they can bring it back to normal.
Okay, let's go to Mary, who's calling us from Covina, California. Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'd like to ask Dr. Blaylock, he mentioned phytates, and I eat grains, a combination of grains, and I thought that it was a good idea to soak them in water to neutralize the phytates. Did I get that right? Or I think it was because what I had learned was that it will bind with minerals and take them out of your body, and you want those.
Right.
Can you kind of expound on that?
Yeah, that's the problem with eating high-fiber diets from grains, is the high phytate content. And particularly in women that are premenopausal, they'll find the problem is they stay anemic. Their iron is too low. And they just can't ever, they'll take iron supplements or whatever, and they never can get their hemoglobin back up, and that's because the phytates bind it. But it also binds some other minerals as well. Now, as far as soaking it to remove the phytates, I'm not sure that'll work. But it, you know, if you have some special knowledge that works, that's fine. Generally, to get your fiber, you should get it from things like flax fiber. flax is very high in soluble fiber, and the soluble fiber is what really is most helpful. So I would suggest instead of eating the grain fiber, I would use the flax fiber instead.
Well, I wasn't really doing it for the fiber. It was just, I buy the grains in bulk and I grind them all up and soak them at night. Is it actually bad? And I usually eat it with an apple, cut up every morning.
If you wasn't doing it for the fiber, why were you doing it?
Well, just to eat something, because I don't want to buy the cold cereal, and you know, instead of eating an egg, or that was the thing that I would eat for breakfast.
Oh, what would be something that would be giving you the nutrition for the breakfast?
Well, I don't generally recommend eating grains for breakfast or cereals. You know, I don't see any problem with eggs unless you're allergic to eggs. You know, the egg has a very good protein balance.
What about toast for breakfast?
Are you asking me?
No, I'm asking.
Well, the toast is a high grain as right. Well, if you're eating whole wheat bread or whole grain bread. You mix grains, you're going to get the phytates as well. But, you know, I don't see any harm in a slice of bread for breakfast. It's what you eat throughout the whole day. If you're eating grains throughout the whole day, then, you know, you can have some problems.
No, I'm just eating them for breakfast, and it's just 3 tablespoons.
Yeah,
I grind it, and it's just about right with a cut-up apple.
Yeah, if it's just for breakfast, I don't think that would be any problem.
How about the apple?
The apple's fine.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Mary?
No, thanks
God bless.
So much.
Thanks. Let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. Do you have a question?
Yes, in fact, I found an article by Dr. Otto Warburg in Science, 24 February 1956, called The Origin of Cancer Cells. And he delineates a metabolic mechanism involving a progressive substitution or replacement of aerobic glycolysis with anaerobic, and at some point where the anaerobic predominates, the cell's morphology regresses into the cancer.
All right, let's get to Dr. Blaylock's response, because that was a long, long time ago. Do you have any thoughts on what Jack is saying?
Well, basically, this was something that sort of held up, is that cancer cells don't operate well under oxygen environments. In fact, some of the experiments have shown if you put cancer patients in hyperbaric chambers and then give them chemotherapy or radiation, the cancer cell is much easier to kill. And that's because the oxygen cannot be utilized by the cell for energy production, and therefore just ends up producing a lot of free radicals and kills the cancer cell. Cancer cells are very glucose dependent because they're using the anaerobic metabolism, and therefore they'll steal the energy molecule, the glucose, from other cells. And this is part of the reason you see the starvation in cancer patients, because the cancer is consuming such a high content of the glucose. And that's why eating high sugar diets, if you have cancer, makes the cancer grow faster, because it cannot use any other fuel other than the glucose. So, you know, his observation was basically correct. We have a better understanding of it now.
Okay, thanks very much, Jack. Let's go to Theodora calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Theodora.
Hi, Dr. Stan, and hi, Dr. Blaylock. And I always enjoy when the two of you are working together, making sure we know what to do to stay healthy.
Right. Well, of course, he does all the work. I just have the pleasure of having the opportunity to offer it to you. Anyway, do you have a question for me?
Well, a comment and a question. It makes me think that the push for Geritol in the 50s and 60s was really an early form of flu shots.
Well, now, what do you mean by that? Because
Geritol
is basically an alcohol solution.
Well, it was an iron. It was heavy on the iron.
Was it heavy on the iron?
It was heavy on the iron, and that was one of the big pushes for it. And, you know, we might think it's just, you know, it was just a product, but, you know, we see how they push the flu shots.
Right.
And we know what happens with that. So I wanted to comment on that. But the question I have, and it's not totally on subject, except that everything you're talking about is a supplement related. It's something we can go to our health food stores and buy. And I wanted to bring up the issue of the Codex Alimentarius, which is rapidly approaching, coming from the World Trade Organization and already in effect in several countries in Europe, which would essentially take away our right to walk into a health food store and buy these products.
Well, don't you know that the government knows far better what's good for us, like MSG and aspartame and iron, all of those things. I share your concern. Let's get Dr. Blaylock's response. I'm sure you're well aware of the Codex and this effort really to deprive us of the right to be able to determine how we want to take care of our own health. What are your thoughts on that, Russell?
Well, the people behind the Codex is the pharmaceutical companies. The Codex started with the United Nations through the World Health Organization, and it ended up in the WTO. But pharmaceutical companies are the people in the shadows that's pushing this. What they want to do is get rid of the supplement industry because they realize that most diseases are going to be dramatically reduced if people eventually catch on to the power of nutrition and nutritional supplementation. And so they want to get rid of that terrible danger to their business. And they're behind this. And they're using government structure to do it, and of course they're lying, telling all these terrible dangers of supplements, which is an absolute lie. The risk of supplements is, death from supplements is less than bee stings, which is the lowest risk on the entire spectrum. So it's all predicated on that, but if you look where the money is, it's pharmaceutical companies. They want to make sure that only doctors can prescribe supplements, because they know the doctors don't know the first thing about supplements, the first thing about nutrition, and they're not going to subscribe to any of them. And so patients are just going to be without.
And I share your concern, Theodore, and I would urge all of our listeners to write to their congressman or their senator and say, stop this. You know, if you really care about your constituents, you're going to damage their health, and do not believe anything the FDA says.
I want to give out a website.
All right,
The website is the kind of the group that's overseeing it, and I'm not sure how it's the three W's. And the initials IAHF.com.
IAHF.com.
And I know that's the International Association of Health Federation or something like that, but they're a group that oversees these kind of issues. But the other thing I want, for people who didn't catch that or are in the Santa Cruz, Monterey area, pick up the current Connection magazine. It just came out, and on the back page is a whole ad for this issue with the websites, and I just really encourage people to be proactive on this one because, they know we know.
Okay.
And they don't want us to act on what we know.
And I would encourage everybody to write to the congressmen, to write to the senators, and get their friends to write and let people understand that what they're doing is going to destroy our health.
And pick up a connection so you can get better informed so you know actually what to tell them.
God bless. Thanks.
Okay, thank you too.
Let's go to Bill calling in Florida. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Dr. Stan, Dr. Blaylock. I had two questions. First one, is there any natural treatments for Lyme disease that you know of? Or anything that you can take instead of antibiotics?
Well, one of the most impressive things I've seen so far is intravenous high-dose ascorbate.
And vitamin C, you're speaking of.
Vitamin C, as an ascorbate. Now, it takes very high doses, up to 10 grams, and some as high as 100 grams.
Does that help the chronic fatigue as well?
It may. It's very powerful antiviral. It may kill the Lyme spirochete as well. I know some of the clinics, like Julian Whitaker Clinic, is doing it, and it's gotten some very good results from it. But I think of all the things I've seen, the high dose, 70 to 100 grams of vitamin C daily for, I think, to give it 3 or 4 days, has had some rather dramatic effects in some people. And one of the things you see in Lyme disease that you see in a lot of these chronic diseases is they'll drop their iron level so low that they'll start developing neurological symptoms and developing extreme fatigue. Once you find that low iron, you have to take iron supplements. for you to just progressively get worse. But at the same time, I would do it with the vitamin C treatment.
Okay, Bill?
Yeah, just one quick question. Wondering when Dr. Blaylock was going to research and write a book on Lyme disease, seeing as it's becoming an epidemic.
Well, I would include it in a book because it is becoming an epidemic and doctors won't diagnose it. Most doctors have no knowledge of it. They don't know babesiosis, which is commonly with it, and that it is becoming an epidemic disease.
Maybe we could do a program sometime real soon on that. How would that be?
Sounds good.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. All right, fine. We're going to be back, but when we get back, we've got Leif calling us from Norway, so we're going to have to go to a Leif here, and we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty, and then, Diane, we'll get to you. Hi, is this Leif?
Yes.
Hi, do you have a quick question or comment for our guest? This is Leif calling from Norway.
Yes, thank you. A quick question. Vitamin B17 against cancer. You had Kent Hovind on the program some days ago, and he, in one of his seminars, speaks about apricot seeds and vitamin B17.
All right. What are your thoughts on that, Russell?
Well, you know, that was a rage at one time, and I've spoke to a couple of oncologists that used it, and they were quite impressed with it. It did certainly improve the well-being of the patient, slowed the cancer growth. And of course, the only people they were using it is patients who were within months or weeks of dying. You know, they wouldn't give it to the patient in the beginning stages of cancer. They always waited until they were almost dying before they tried it. And so it never really got a good trial. And not certainly a better controlled trial than it did, and now it's pretty much out of vogue, but I think it had some potential, particularly if combined with these other things that I write about.
Well,
yeah.
Leif, I actually talked to Dr. Dean Burke, who was the number one man in cancer research at the National Cancer Institute. He called me one day and said, this works. It's better than any chemotherapy that we have available. And I said, well, what about the Sloan Kettering study? He said they fixed that to show it wouldn't work. So you got to be pretty evil to do something like that. Anything else, Leif?
No, that's all.
Let's go to Diane, who's calling from Aptos. Hi, and this is the last call we can take because we're out of time. Hi, Diana. How are you?
Two questions quick. Was it CLA that the guest was saying would help, and what is that for fat?
That's conjugated linoleic acid, CLA.
Okay.
You can buy it anywhere.
Okay.
And it will reduce fat content.
Okay.
And also, omega-3 fats reduce the number of fat cells.
Okay. I'm addicted to honey. How do I get off of honey?
Just quit taking it. Any addiction. You just stop doing it.
Just stop it. Okay.
God bless you, Dad.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I want to thank you so very much for being with us again. And I will give the telephone number out when all of our stations are back. But right now, Dr. Blaylock's letter... 800-485-4350. That's 1-800-485-4350. I subscribe to the newsletter, and I'm paying for the newsletter, and I think it's a great newsletter. It's worth not that expensive, and information here that truly can save your life. Russell, God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us.
God bless you, Stan. I certainly appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, our special guest has been, once again, Dr. Russell Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and once again, let me just mention that 800 number where you can get Dr. Blaylock's newsletter, of which I've subscribed to, and I'm paying for the newsletter. They're not giving it to me free,
but I
hope that you'll go ahead and give it serious consideration, at least talk to it, put out by Newsmax. The number is 800-485-4350. That's 1-800-485-4350, and you get it every once a month by email. And Dr. Blaylock does a lot of great work putting this information together for you. And if you'd like to learn more, why, you can call that 800 number. And then, of course, we do carry Dr. Blaylock's books, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, his book, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, and excitotoxins, the taste it kills, dealing with MSG and NutraSweet that are actually precipitating so much diabetes and suffering and progressive brain disease and endocrine dysfunction and mental disease and tumors, and all of these things are being produced, and the government knows about it. They just don't want you to know about it. Again, the books, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, and then, of course, we have a four-tape set of interviews with Dr. Blaylock entitled Life-Saving Secrets. So they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then we've asked a question several times. Why would anybody want to withhold this information? Well, you need to hear our four-tape set. It is interviews with Dr. Dennegan, who in 1969 heard the medical director of Planned Parenthood, Dr. Richard Day, talking about the plan. The plan to actually suppress knowledge of cancer treatments, to suppress them because, well, there were too many people in the world that were going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. How they were going to have to produce new diseases as means of mass killing. And, well, it was just 3 months after that when Dr. MacArthur went before the House Appropriations Committee for the military and asked for $10 million to create a new disease that would be useful for mass killing. Create a new disease that they knew would be useful for mass killing, but they wanted to do it anyway. And you, if you want to see that testimony, we have it. We'll send it to you free of charge. This is just a MacArthur, Dr. MacArthur testimony of the 1969 House Appropriations Committee. We do have a four-tape set. It's called The New Order of the Barbarians. That's The New Order of the Barbarians. Comes, and you can get the transcript with it. It's the most, one of the most incredible things we have. And after talking to Dr. Dennegan myself, why I'm convinced what he's saying is absolutely true. And ladies and gentlemen, there really is evil in the world. And if you doubt that, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the Brotherhood of Darkness special with a book, video, and audio tape. You need to get the book, Lucifer's Children, or the video, Lucifer's Children. You need to get the video or DVDs on They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You'll see many of our most outstanding rock music stars singing about Satan and Aleister Crowley, and some of them admitting that they'd actually sold their souls to the devil. Could such things happen in this day and age? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are people who are in communication with the demonic world. If you believe the Bible, you'll actually read about how Jesus went encountered the man who was possessed by a legion of devils there at Gerizim on the east coast of the Sea of Galilee. Now, I've stood there at the same spot where that took place. And if you believe the Bible, why, Jesus was actually able to cast those devils out and, of course, send them into a herd of pigs. Do such things happen today? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are demonic forces at work in the world today. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until Tuesday. May the Lord be with you.